Once knew these two guys. Each, in their own way, had had it all. And blew it. Left with broken brains and battered bravery, having to find parts of themselves they had seen in film and cinema. But who were they anymore? If they were going to do this, it needed to be the most thorough search for identity ever undertaken. Welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast with your hosts, Ben Groves and Rob McFarlane. This episode contains spoilers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Groves.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show, where two best friends with awful mental health analyze the best and worst of cinema as a distraction from examining themselves too hard. And it's sort of part movie analysis, part self-analysis.
Yes, sir.
All fun nonsense. But given that this is a mental health check-in, Ben, I feel it's important to ask before I get to what we're doing, how are we doing, and how was this film relevant to your week?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
Not too bad. Not too bad. This film was very fucking welcome this week. Delicate. Forgive yourself. Let's all work on our healing. Doesn't matter how long it takes. It's going to click eventually. Type movie. So that was nice.
Yeah, yeah.
I was in bits for 40% of it. I was fucking crying with laughter for the other 40% of it. And 20% of it, I was, you know, adjusting position. Getting a coffee, sitting back down. The rest of it was just emotional turmoil for like 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
It was great.
Nice.
How are you? How did this affect you, buddy?
Well, I've rough week sort of cut my hand open again. I've managed to burn my face with hot oil. That was just at home. Just
excellent.
For, you know, fun and pleasure.
Brilliant. I need to call someone, man. Just sort of like, I don't know if there's like a carer's helpline.
Yeah. Or like I should just not wear boxing gloves when cooking, clearly.
Yeah. That would be good.
It's not helping.
No.
But no, it was nice because we'd done Zone of Interest last week, and that was a ride. That was an awful, horrible ride.
It was a delicate line.
So we kind of needed to pick me up, and it was nice because I saw this before you, and so you were live texting me whilst watching it, and that was the greatest gift my week could have had because you sort of went, oh, it's really warm, it's really cozy, it's a really nice film. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, but you're a cock, though. I've got a bone to pick. And then it went off the rails. Yeah.
And there was a point where you became so dramatically paranoid. You were like, is one of them going to die? And I'm like, oh, I can't say. And it's just the vision of you just sat there in sheer panic about what I'd made you watch. We've just come from Zone of Interest. Yeah. And now you're there being like, fuck, 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 what is this? Where am I?
Yes, it was horrible. And also, I was just in a state of like, cuddling my dog so much. My dog thought that something was genuinely wrong with me because of how much I was sobbing. I had to send you a video to show you where my dog was lying, which was on my
on your face.
Neck, literally just sort of like, are you okay? You seem sad. And I'm like, yes, but it's all Rob's fault. I was sending you videos to be sort of like, fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
And then voice notes to be like, Rob, I'm so confused. I don't know whether I'm happy or sad. So that was fun. Yeah, thanks for that, buddy. I'm glad that made your week because it was such a fucking event to watch this film.
Yeah.
Holy shit. And you made it 10 times worse, by the way, because you were just sending that stupid fucking emoji face with a zipper for the mouth.
Yeah.
That's so infuriating and impersonal. You were just sort of like, meh.
Yeah, but no, because if I say anything, it's going to colour your expectations, right? If I go no, or if I say yes, or if I say maybe, it's almost foreshadowing territory, you know?
I think at that point, you could have said, Ben, no one dies. It's a lovely film. And I would have been sort of like, oh, fuck you, you dirty little liar. You absolute bastard trying to trip me up
again. Exactly. Exactly. Right. And then you'd have been thinking that they were. So it's just the emojis the only way out, you know?
I fucking hate the emojis, man.
What are we doing today, Ben?
Today, buddy, we are knee deep in our Oscars season. We are covering The Holdovers.
Yes.
Yes, buddy.
Happy with that.
This is the wettest Oscar season so far.
I disagree because Dunkirk was nominated for Oscars and that's widely regarded as the wettest film.
Very
We've agreed
wet film.
Previously on this podcast.
Yeah.
It's the wettest film ever made, both emotionally and practically.
Yeah.
So
I'm on about just tears because
I've
cried a lot this Oscar season. Right, okay. Man, like, it's getting out of hand.
Let me guess. Okay. So Zone of Interest, because obviously
Yes.
This, because it's warm and lovely.
And about forgiving yourself and dealing with your shit.
And Poor Things, because you'll never get that.
Poor Things. I don't think I cried at Poor Things. I might have.
Right, okay.
I might have.
I'm still wet, though.
Yeah, but that's a different thing. I wasn't wet. You know what I mean?
Right, okay.
It's the wettest Oscar season for Ben Groves.
Right, yeah. I think we should swiftly move on and talk about the holdovers, Ben.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
So, Holdovers came out this year. It's nominated for a bevy of Oscars.
Bevy.
But would it surprise you to know that so far it has made $40 million?
Ooh.
Which for an indie movie...
That's pretty fucking good.
Almost unheard of. Ooh. Now, you'd think that would be happy days for Focus Features, right? Mm-hmm. You know? No. They bought it at the Toronto International Film Festival after it was screened for buyers.
Right.
It was a bidding war and they won the bid at $30 million.
Worth it. So worth every penny.
Some buyer at Focus Features has just had his coke bender vindicated. Mm. The whole time since this movie was bought, he was just there going, fuck. I just got carried away. It was fucking Steven from A24 and I didn't want to let that cunt win again.
Yeah. They've already got two in the Oscars this year. They can fuck off if they're having a third.
Yeah, exactly. And he's just there going, I've lost Focus 30 million. I've lost the... No, it's all right, dude. You made it.
Yeah.
It's just scraped a profit on what you bought it for. So yeah. You're all good.
Congratulations all round on a successful, arse-clenchingly sized purchase.
Massively expensive price, but it is nominated for Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actress, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Editing.
Wow.
At the Academy Awards.
How many do you think it's going to take?
The Holdovers is nominated for 5 Oscars.
Yes, it is.
I think it might be lucky to get one.
Ooh.
And I think it's going to get Best Original Screenplay. I think it's just going to get edged out by the other films that the Academy feels it has to give a little something to. There's a lot of very, very good films this year. And I feel like they're going to go, everyone gets one.
The Oscars are now a participation trophy. Well done.
Yeah, well done. Celine Song, you get this.
Yeah.
Christopher Nolan, you get this because we can't snub you for a 9th year in a row.
Hmm.
You know, I think it'll get edged out.
Has Nolan never had an Oscar?
No, I don't think he has, but I would need to double check that.
Okay.
I think he's had lots of nom nom noms, but he's not had any wins.
Right. Okay.
So for the benefit of those who haven't seen The Holdovers yet, should we do our usual foreshadowing warning and say that we are going to heavily foreshadow this film?
Heavily foreshadow with spoilers.
With an exact plot breakdown. Actually, Ben, it's called foreshadowing.
Careful,
it's not
mate.
Called a spoiler.
Don't
fucking
add
idiot.
To the chafe pandemic that's been caused by one clip on the internet some few weeks ago. I was infuriated. My phone buzzed as we hit record, and people are still going, actually.
It's enough to make me never want to say anything online ever again.
I know. That's why I asked you about Nolan's Oscar, because I was hoping you'd commit one way or another and then have someone go, just fucking throw the glasses to the bridge of the nose and start typing out an essay.
Fuck it. It's all engagement.
All right, cool.
Can you start this one? This is a nice, friendly, relatively straight.
Okay.
Straight enough, like ourselves. But there's a couple of long words, so I've grabbed the ones with long words because X-Men. I couldn't even fucking type them, let alone read them out.
Is this why you were asking me how to spell shit earlier?
Yeah.
All right, I'll go first then. Spoiler warning!
Foreshadowing!
Sorry, mate. Nobody likes teacher Paul Hunnam, played by Paul Giamatti. Not his students, not his fellow faculty, not the headmaster, who all find his pompous manner and superior tone absolutely fucking exhausting. I wonder what that feels like.
Fuck off.
With no family and nowhere to go over Christmas holiday in 1970, Paul is made to remain at school to supervise students unable to journey home.
After a few days, only one student holdover remains. A troublemaking 18-year-old named Angus Tully, played by Dominic Sessa, a bright student whose bad behaviour always threatens to get him expelled. This is like his 5th or 6th school. And if he gets expelled again, he's going to the military academy. And it's 1970, so Vietnam's on. It's probably not a good idea.
Oh.
Joining Paul Hunnam, the teacher, and Angus Tully, the poorly behaved student, is head cook Mary, played by Davine Joy Randolph, who's incredible, by the way.
Insanely good.
An African-American woman who caters to sons of privilege and whose own son, Curtis, who studied at the school, was recently lost in Vietnam.
During one of their many disputes during the break, Angus decides he's had enough of listening to Hunnam and leads him on a chase of the school grounds, ultimately leading to a panic drive to the emergency room to fix Angus's dislocated shoulder. Fantastic.
It's such a good scene.
It's so
good.
You
said you washed your hands of me. I'm looking after you. You said you washed your hands of me. Dude,
Angus's face in that whole scene just looks like a melted candle. And it's fucking incredible. I was pissing myself laughing, man. It's so good. Avoiding any scandal with a series of well-deployed lies, Angus asks only for an evening off campus as a reward, leading all three through a series of awkward circumstances to attend the same Christmas Eve party of a local staff member.
Hunnam gets his romantic hopes raised and then immediately dashed by their well-intentioned hostess.
So sweet.
While Angus strikes it lucky, Angus, however, strikes it lucky with another partygoer his age. Both are immediately interrupted by the breakdown of Mary, still engulfed in the grief of losing her son, Curtis.
God.
And then it's home time, because you can't. The vibe's a bit.
No.
The vibe is in shambles after someone's had a bit
there's
of...
priorities. Right? You can chase tail, or you can help your friend. Yeah. You know what I mean?
There's only so much 1950s footage of farm machinery can do, and, you know.
See? Bad friend. Ben, do you want a bit of coke? Sniff this. Ketamine. Ben, what do you just...
I was a different man, Ben.
What do you just lie down and watch this nice relaxing film? What is it? 1950s footage of farm machinery whilst everyone around you parties until about 6 a.m. Enjoy the K-hole.
All I'm saying is, you found your entertainment. I knew exactly what would keep you entertained for about 8.5 hours.
It was about 8.5 hours of the same fucking YouTube clip.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about that. That's it. That's a core memory right there. That is, man. That's a fucking core memory. All right. Oh my god. All right, we're talking about that later, because that's fucking...
It was a different man, Ben.
It's tickled something inside me, that is, man. At dinner, Hunnam extends an olive branch and asks what he can do to fix Christmas. On the suggestion that Angus wants to go to Boston, Mary gets dropped off on the way at her sister's house, where she drops off her son Curtis's baby clothes and has some family time over Christmas. Heartbreaking and beautiful. All in one.
Yeah.
Hilarious, tear-inducing, fucking heartbreak, whiplash moment. Hunnam and Angus spend time bonding, with Hunnam opening up about his colourful past, instilling in Angus a love of his teaching subject, and both relaxing into a new kind of friendship until Angus, once again, runs away. This time, to see his father, previously described as dead.
But the cemetery is, in fact, a mental hospital, and his father is, in fact, not dead, but a highly disassociative schizophrenic who spends what little time he has with his estranged son on conspiracies about his food rather than anything of any substance. Heartbroken, Angus is put back together by Hunnam, the voice of experience letting him know that things will eventually get better. Mary joins them at dinner, and they set fire to dessert.
Man, even that put a little catch in my throat. Do you know what I mean?
Really? Jesus, so there's a scene that we're talking about, you know, it's this huge emotional crux of the movie, and Angus is in bits, and the two adults kind of get it, and they try and get him dessert, Cherry's Jubilee, which is a sort of flambéed fruit, which is pour alcohol and you burn the alcohol off, and the restaurant won't do it because he's under 18. So it ends up with them in a car park pouring Hunnam's pocket whiskey over some cherries in a takeaway box, which immediately just catches fire and they have to kick onto the ground.
Yeah, which is it's the best dessert that an 18-year-old boy could have. You know what I mean? On return to term, Angus's mother and stepfather arrive to withdraw Angus from the school. The trip to Boston has led to tragedy. The snow globe Angus gifted his father was used as a weapon, and he now needs to be moved. Certain that Angus had manipulated Hunnam into the visit, they want Angus shifted to military school, where he will likely end up, just like Mary's son, in Vietnam. Hunnam instead lies. He covers for Angus at the cost of his job, leading to a restrained but emotional goodbye before the credits.
Mm.
Catch in my fucking throat, buddy. Uncontrollable tears. Could not stop crying. I was full ugly crying by the end of this film.
Yeah.
I mean, like, emotional breakdown type crying.
Good.
Yeah, you fucking love this, man. You're loving this. This is the hardest part. That, like, of all the things we've done on this podcast, this Oscar season is the hardest fucking thing, because it's essentially what you've done is put a mirror in front of me and gone,
here's all your deepest, darkest thoughts put on a big screen where everyone is able to deal with their bullshit. Have fun. Right, but this is why I like the Oscars, because the Oscars for me is, I would never have watched these films if they weren't nominated for Oscars.
Same.
Because a lot of them had tiny promotion budgets, and I get to the cinema once every year, you know, so I don't often have a chance to kind of find out about deep indie movies. I find out about the very thin crust of stuff that's aggressively marketed at me.
Yeah.
And the Oscars is the one time a year where it goes, here's something truly excellent that will challenge you and make you go, oh, I learned a thing about life or me, and I didn't have to live that experience. I could see a fictional account of it and go, oh, that's interesting. So it's challenging, but it's like,
I love that that's your response on I'm the autistic one. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's your response to the holdovers. What was the holdovers for you?
Like a total surprise. Like, I thought it was going to be a quiet comedy.
Same.
You know, I was like, oh, it's going to be like a middle class.
Yeah.
You know, music that like upper middle class people put on at dinner parties.
Like the Violent Femmes.
It's kind of fine if you ignore it.
Yeah.
And then when you listen to it, you're like, oh, this is empty. I kind of thought it might be a bit like a bit schmaltzy, a bit twee, a bit like America can sometimes do sincerity and sweetness in a way that really sticks in my throat. I'm like, that's just
like Lana Del Rey covering a Radiohead song.
Exactly like that.
Yeah. It's great for adverts, but it means fuck all. Like it takes all meaning out of the lyrics completely, but it works great on a John Lewis advert. You know what I mean?
Lloyd's TSB music.
Yeah, okay. I know exactly what you mean.
If I want to see a horse run in slow motion while someone talks about ISIS, that's what I put on. And
Lana Del Rey.
It might be that.
I'm a crib.
At 7% APR. But it's not that. It's a very contemporary. It's what it is it's a 70s movie made for a contemporary audience. So the 70s style of cinema was investigating parts of life that 70s audiences cared about, right?
Oh,
look at this nutter who drives a taxi. I wonder what's going on in his head.
Yeah.
Right? It's that kind of, King of Comedy, another Scorsese movie. It was like a sort of failed comedian who eventually ramps up, kind of white middle class or working class dudes and their anger. And it was that style of filmmaking, but applied to people I actually give a shit about.
Okay. Well, I think we watched different 70s movies, because my mind immediately went to The Hills Have Eyes and Suspiria. Yeah, you know what I mean?
70s cinema, sorry. 70s movies.
Got you, yeah.
But what's fascinating about this is it's not a retro movie. And I'll link this in with your point, actually.
Okay.
I think Alexander Payne, the director of this movie, has gone about making a film the exact opposite way that Rob Zombie goes about making a film, right?
Okay. How so?
Because Rob Zombie makes 70s movies and it will start with like a cigarette burn in the film.
Oh.
And the film grain will be incredibly heavy.
Right.
And then someone will walk in with an afro and handlebar mustache and some flares.
Yeah.
And a little crop top and be like, gee, boy, I love being in 1973.
Gee, boy, it's not fucking 1960s Batman. Gee willikers.
That's kind of that's kind of how I feel Rob Zombie puts his dialogue there. He puts it so it could not possibly be any other time ever. He's like, it's the 70s. Look, it's the 70s. Look.
Okay.
Look at it.
All right.
Whereas this film, it's very 70s. The grain is perfect. Like, everything is perfect.
Yeah.
But it's very subtle. It just lets you get on with the movie. After a certain point, you're watching a film. You're forgetting. And you've not got someone go, look at it. Look at how 70s
look
it is.
Look at this. Where are you right now? Are you in the 90s?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I got you. I need to defend Rob Zombie a little bit, though.
Okay. He needs it.
I feel like... Yeah, I do. Because I feel like he's doing the best he can. I think what he's done is he's pulled out like seven cliches from 70s grindhouse cinema and gone,
yeah.
So that's every film that's ever existed in the 1970s. So if I want to make one look like that, it has to have everything, all the time.
Yeah.
I know Rob Zombie, I understand he doesn't talk like that, but in my mind, it's very funny to put Rob Zombie's face on that voice.
I dig through them ditches and I burn through them witches. I slam in my Dracula.
Black top rolling.
I'm a super beast.
I'm going to put those seven cliches in every movie I ever make. And then...
This has gone on for far too long. It's far too fun.
I'm going to do the monsters.
You've ruined Rob Zombie for me.
But what I'm saying is...
Yeah.
I forgot what I was saying. There was a joke about the monsters being shit. Yeah.
Shall I just laugh anyway and you
let's
get
just
payoff?
We'll just laugh. Rob Zombie nailed you, you fucker.
Yeah.
So the holdovers for me, it's the warm fuzzy that you get on Christmas morning watching your nephews and nieces open presents. Your other nephew is setting the Xbox up on the big TV in the living room.
Nice.
You're all about to sit down and play through Halo 2 for the first time ever.
Yeah.
Start to finish. Taking it in turns, doing each level. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's that warm family. It's the nice closeness that you get on a very rare occasion, right? And it was...
I get what you mean.
It was Matilda. It's Matilda. It's the end of Matilda for me. This entire film is
okay.
That.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you mean because I've never seen Matilda. So that's a great reference.
How have you never seen Matilda?
Because I'm an adult man who doesn't watch children's films. And when I was a child...
It's not a children's film. It's not a children's film. She's the best superhero that's ever existed. Miss Honey? Fuck you, man.
Again, I've not seen the film. And what you're doing is you're naming characters and then looking at me like I would go, oh, yeah.
Did you just call Miss Honey a fucking character? Is the Pope a character? No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
That bitch has got miracles under his belt.
Pope's not real.
Miss Honey's got miracles under her belt too. All right?
Again, I haven't seen Matilda.
Yes, man, we're doing Matilda soon. It's incredible. Danny DeVito's like, it's fine. Doesn't matter.
Fine. I get what you mean, it's though. That. For me, it wasn't written in the script that it was snowing.
No one planned for snow at Christmas time.
Stop being a facetious prick. You know exactly what I mean. It wasn't in the script. They were just lucky that it was snowing.
Right. So the script, it reads, in the desert of Massachusetts.
What I like about this film is it kind of uses winter.
Sorry.
You know, it's cold outside. The whole world is cold. It uses it as a metaphor for the sort of social conditions that the characters find themselves in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That coming together at Christmas, you know, the festival that we put on the winter equinox when it's never darker.
Yes.
So we'll put up lights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's 100% this movie. The content of this movie is the world is a fucking cold place. Find some light. Show it to a friend. It's essentially this film.
That's
because
really,
it's fucking cold outside.
That is a really, really lovely way to sum up this film because that's exactly it. It's not about right? The characters or their big life-changing events that set them on the paths that they're on. It's the characters dealing with the fallout of those situations.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's not
100%.
It's not the kaboom. It's not the A-bomb going off.
It's the chick-chick-chick-chick of shit falling back down to earth.
It's the nuclear fallout ruining a desert. The desert of Massachusetts at Christmas.
You're a bastard because you knew that by doing a callback I'd have to keep the previous bit in even though I restarted.
Welcome so, thanks for to, a... the edit. Welcome to the edit. Welcome to the edit.
Oh god, it's a fucking snake eating itself. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I do think you're right. Each of the characters brings something unique.
Yeah.
So you've got your three characters. You've got your young lad in Angus Tully, who is experiencing a lot of trauma for the first time.
Yes.
His parents have rung him up at Christmas and gone, you're going to stay at boarding school this Christmas because with everything that's going on with your dad, and at the time we don't know what's going on with his dad.
Yeah.
His mum's just like, look, you know, me and your stepdad haven't had a chance to have a honeymoon. So we're going to do that now over Christmas and you're going to stay in school. So he's dealing with like contemporary trauma. Meanwhile, you've got Hunnam, who's kind of locked himself into this really isolating, lonely life where he holds himself and everyone around him to these impossible ideals of what a Barton man is
and what
the students around him should be and what his colleagues should be. And as a result, everyone fucking hates him and he's entirely by himself because nobody, including him, can live up to the standards that he's set. And of course, Mary, who's... Her trauma is very obvious and very present in the loss of her son. But each one of them, they kind of typify a different way of dealing with that. So Angus, you've got his idealism of his youth. He's okay. Like, well, the world should be this and it should be that. And this is what I think. And he likes to think of the world as very friendly and very possible. Mm-hmm. I can get a beer from my teacher. I can kiss this girl at this party. And when it turns out he can't do those things, he can't have a nuclear family with his dad because his dad's riddled with mental health issues and his parents aren't loving about it. He has that disappointment. You've got Hunnam who steps in with his experience, and a lot of that experience has taught him to be bitter and set low expectations. Yeah, and the idealism versus experience plays off in those two characters. And Mary the cook, for me, was compassion. And all three of them, Mary brings the compassion. Why are you being like this to a kid? Why are you being so harsh on yourself? You need to open up. You need to this. Each one of them brings something to the table that the others need. Hunnam and Mary need a bit of idealism.
I love that.
But Mary and Angus need a bit of experience.
I fucking love that. They all balance each other out. That's really...
Yeah, they all bring something unique to the table.
Okay. That's really fucking interesting. So I saw it a little differently, but now you've said that, it kind of feeds into how I saw it. So I saw each character representing a different stage of dealing with a problem, like a different stage of growth or healing or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you've got Hunnam, who's got problems from years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've been persistent for many years. You've got Mary, who lost a kid a year or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Angus, who has his immediate trauma with his family choosing themselves over him at Christmas. But all three of them deal with and share their expertise of the traumas that they're all like uniquely well-versed in.
Yeah.
It's a healing journey spanning years and years and years, taking three different faces.
Yeah.
The lesson remains the same. And it's these three people mm-hmm. that are on slightly different parts of the same timeline going, it's okay, it gets better. Or this is the knee-jerk
it's
reaction.
It's okay, it's been better. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly what
nice
it is. It's
nice little kind of interesting. They're all at different points in their time past
they're
their
fucking
trauma.
Time travelers. It's almost a sci-fi movie in the fact that Angus can see years into the future. I mean, Hunnam and Angus share the same medication, right?
Yeah, they do. Librium, the antidepressant. Yeah. And Angus is like, oh, it's a vitamin.
Yeah.
He tries to play it off and closes the bathroom door, and then Hunnam just goes to his own backpack, pulls out the Librium, smiles and pops one.
Exactly. But you know what I mean? Like, he's looking at Angus going, yeah, bud, we're there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can be ashamed of
I
it
remember
now.
I remember being shy about my condition.
Yeah. I remember my first pills.
Yeah.
But it's like Angus has this like ability to see years into the future and go, okay, so people are dealing with it and they are living their lives and this, that, and the other, but they still need the little bit of help. Maybe I shouldn't be as ashamed of this as I am right now.
Yeah.
And that is such a fucking beautiful little nod.
Oh God, yeah.
It's incredible.
God, yeah. Speaking of beautiful, do you think Paul Giamatti was offended that his part in The Holdovers was written specifically for him?
I mean, there's two ways to look at this.
The cross-eyed, fish-stinking guy that everyone hates.
Oh, can you imagine? Can you imagine that phone call, though? Can you imagine that phone call? I tell you what, you be Paul Giamatti.
No, I'll be the agent. I'll be the agent.
Okay. Cool. Hello? Oh, hello.
Hi, Paul. It's Stephen from WMA Artist here.
Hey, Stephen.
You may remember I invited you to my birthday party last year, and you.
Thank you so much. It was lovely.
Couldn't make it, I see. But
Sorry
anyway,
about that.
Anyway, we've got a part here, and I just saw it, and I thought it was perfect.
Oh, incredible!
It really sums up the way that you know you and I have developed as friends over the years. You know,
lay it on me.
Paul Hunnam, you know, he's an experienced teacher. He knows his stuff. He's very passionate about his subject.
Oh, so he's a passionate academic teacher. Yeah, I'm invested.
Yeah.
I'm in.
He's hideous.
Okay.
He's a hideous man.
I'm a little...
That makes people upset to look at. They don't know which way he's looking ever because he's so cross-eyed.
Wow.
And it's just universally hated. Just everybody. Good. Everybody just thinks he's a real piece of shit.
Okay, so I'm assuming that this is like an open casting call. There's going to be like multiple people.
No. This was written for you.
Fantastic.
This was written for you. He really, really had you in mind.
I was at the party. I stole the silverware. I'll take the part. Click. Yeah, 1000%. I don't think he was offended. That's going to be fucking incredible. I'd be flattered if someone did that. You know what I mean? Hey, we've written this part for a weird... autistic British guy with no chin, and if he laughs too hard, he looks like an earthworm stubbed his toe. And I'll be like, oh, I know just the guy. I know just the guy.
If Chris Hemsworth ever gets on the heroin, that's exactly the how the call's going to go.
Yes, buddy.
No, so I watched an interview and Giamatti wasn't offended. At first, he was curious as to what it was.
Yeah.
But then he saw the script and saw what the actual meat of the film was about, and he took it as a flattery of like, oh,
right,
he's convinced that I can land the payoff of the film rather than the setup.
Amazing.
You know, which is a nice thing.
And he fucking did.
Yeah. I mean, Alexander Payne, and he did Sideways 20 years ago now.
Nice.
And that's the sort of universe he loves thing. So I think they had a certain level of trust between each other.
Yeah.
You know, they know each other very well. They had a huge hit together. I'd say Alexander Payne probably hasn't had a bigger film than Sideways or this, really.
I'd say that this is probably the warmest, coziest film that Alexander Payne has ever done. And I've got a super, super fun fact about this. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
So Alexander Payne has come out and said that he is nauseated that people find The Holdovers warm and cozy.
What?
Yeah, he said it.
What?
He doesn't understand it. He didn't make a film that was set out to be sort of like a warm and cozy and a nice Christmassy vibe. It was supposed to be like a visceral, unforgiving look at people being people. And I'm like, yes, buddy. But what you've done is you've wrongly assumed that everyone in society is well-adjusted enough for this film
to be
shocking. I guarantee you, mate, it's an interview with Variety. It makes me think that society is so fucked.
No, because that's like someone walking up to Michelangelo and going, oh, wow, that's a really beautiful painting. I mean, he's going, it's fucking what?
Oh, fuck you. It's supposed to be scary. Fuck you. It's not beautiful. What a cunt.
No, God. I can't believe that's true, Ben, because that robs this film of so much.
It doesn't. Okay? I get it. So this film's been made and remade and remade and remade. Obviously, you shoot it, you edit it, it gets cut down. The final version of your film isn't seen until it's out to the public, right?
Yes, of course.
And I understand this. I understand it. But also, for people to turn around and go, oh my God, it makes me feel so warm and so lovely,
And you get nauseated by that.
How pretentious does that make you? Does that make
that's
him seem
incredibly pretentious?
I think he made the mistake.
It kind of puts me off him a bit.
Yeah, he made the mistake of assuming that everyone out in the world is just a well-adjusted person, but society is at a point nowadays that we're all so fucked up that this film of three horrendously broken people going through horrendous situations, and everyone's like, aww. Do you know what I mean?
I see the temptation to see it that way.
Yeah.
But I just think there is absolutely no way that this man didn't know what he was putting out the door. This film is undeniably cozy. This film is undeniably warm. The idea that he put it out not knowing that, he'd either have to be ridiculously stupid, and having seen his film, he's clearly not.
He's definitely not.
Or just a massive pretentious pedant who just doesn't like the word choice. Like, he doesn't like the word cozy. And so they've gone, oh, your film's really cozy. And you mean, do you in fact mean life-affirming? Yeah. I hate the word cozy. It's so base.
Bro, that you're just posh enough to pull that off. Like, that was so convincing. If that's not acting, fuck you. If that is acting, fucking well done, buddy. Holy shit. That caught me so off guard. Well done, buddy. Fuck me.
I can be a condescending prick when I have to be.
Oh.
Definitely doesn't happen by accident all the time.
Yeah. No.
Speaking of all the time, which eye did you think Paul Giamatti had?
What the fuck kind of connection is that?
Well, his eye's wandering off all the time. Speaking of wandering off all the time, which... I'm trying to link this.
It's the best link that has ever happened in an episode ever. I'm so sorry for ruining it. That is fucking incredible.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay, right. Hit me with it again.
Which eye do you think is Paul Giamatti's bad eye in The Holdovers?
Okay. I think some scenes it's the left and some scenes it's the right, because every now and then his left eye is on the door and his right eye is making eye contact with you. And then in the next scene, he'll be bowling and his right eye is looking at the fucking exit and his left eye is like on the lane. You know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah, 100%.
It just switches.
There's like, they just wander and rove as they please. And he was quite cagey at first in interviews. So Paul Giamatti was kind of saying, oh, they're not letting me say it's all a secret, it's all this. But the clue is in the credits.
What do you mean? What do you mean it's in the credits? Paul Giamatti's left eye, Hans Zimmer. Like, what the fuck, man?
So in interviews, he was saying, oh, it was very clever the way they did it. And I don't think they want to spill the secret of how it was achieved. And all, because people are going, oh, is it CGI? Is it this?
is it what? CG what?
Oh, fuck off. Oh, Ben, that was just so base. That was so base and broad.
Oh, it just made me feel warm and cozy. I've had a really long day. I'm so sorry.
Right, yeah, no, it's good. It's good.
I'm back in it.
So he was trying to sort of play it up and be like, oh, well, they don't want me to say it's a big secret. In the credits, it says lens technician, right?
Oh, so, like, okay. Well, that makes more sense than Paul Giamatti's left eye. Like
himself. So
fuck me, man.
The problem is the lens wasn't see-through, right? So they'd put this contact lens on,
right,
and he would be blind in that eye for that take.
Right? For sake, man. Of course now, he would. Why not?
So for all of filming, he only saw half of what was happening to him, right? Paul, including
this part was written just for you. It's about a boss-eyed fish thinking bellend. Yeah, mint. Also, here's a contact lens to make your one boss eye even more boss eye. Also, you're blind. Like, what the fuck?
A couple of scenes where you're driving, but
does Paul Giamatti owe Alexander Payne money? Like, is there like a grand that's been like on a casino night somewhere? And he's like, you fucking owe me that money, buddy. And he's like, yeah, I'll get it to you. Don't worry about it.
Right.
4 years later, he's like, Paul, I've written you into a film.
With friends like Alexander Payne, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, you're driving, you're in a real rush.
Yeah.
You're looking over your shoulder, plus your contact lens means you can't see out of the eye that's facing the road.
Yeah. Also, acting, sell it. Let's go, buddy. Let's fucking go. I fucking love that, man.
I've got a new segment, by the way.
Ooh, what is the segment?
I would have warned you about this, but okay. No mid-show. No preamble, thanks. No foreplay.
Thanks, man.
So this film, Paul Giamatti plays Mr. Hunnam, the classics teacher.
Yep.
And just so happens that my sister studies classics. Now, long-time listeners of the podcast will remember my sister from the Ballad of Dildo Schwaggins.
Yes.
Which you're going to have to go back and listen to the Batman series to get any context on. But trust me, it's worth it.
Leave that completely out of context. Let's continue this conversation Dildo about your
Schwaggins
little sister.
Is good. Yes. They can go listen to the Batman episodes if they want that mystery solved, Riddler. Yeah. but she studies classics, and he keeps bringing up the Peloponnesian War and a character called Aeneas.
He does.
Right, and he goes, oh, Aeneas was carried mistletoe to the underworld when he was going to go see his father.
Yes.
Now, Aeneas enters the underworld as the leader of the Trojans, and he consults with the ghost of his father. And his father sets him straight about what's going to happen in the future, about how you're going to be the father of the Roman Empire. Not
right.
just Troy. You're not just going to you're not just going to lead this little band of merry Trojan men. You're going to be a huge fucking deal. And you're going to be the father of one of the biggest empires the world has ever seen. And he trots back up armed with new knowledge because of the information about the world and about the future that this father figure has given.
Okay.
Does that sound like anything else in this movie? A young man going to see his father who's considered dead.
Fuck.
And then being given advice by a fatherly figure who tells him it's all gonna work out.
Oh, that's fucking incredible.
That is the first nugget from Isabella's Classics Corner. And I vote anytime there's some sort of classical myth involved.
Yeah.
We just consult the library that is my sister's brain and go, right.
Yeah.
Hercules.
1,000% up for this. 1,000%. I'm also 1,000% up for Hercules.
Maybe.
I'm Greek.
There are some blink and you will miss it moments of comedy genius in the holdovers.
There are. I'm sensing that this is a prep list of examples
I've got
that you
two
have.
That I oh, really okay. want to talk six. About.
Yeah,
okay.
Good, 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 good. Because if you were expecting my input,
no, okay, fine, fine. So, you know, they all walk into the party.
Yes.
And the, Mary's face.
Is this the one from the faculty member? She's throwing yes. the party and Paul, Paul Hunnam thinks
it's
he's...
It's the Christmas Eve party.
Yeah.
Mr. Hunnam thinks he's going to get lucky with the hostess.
Yeah, yeah, okay, okay.
Mary's
know,
going
out
of politeness.
Yeah.
When she walks in, mm-hmm. her face is comedy genius.
Oh.
It sums up... I sent you a clip of it.
You have.
Just me giggling.
You sent me an out of context clip of people entering a party about 3 days ago. And I was like, oh, that's pretty good. Now it makes sense.
If she needs to get the Oscar for that face alone.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Just that face. Because it's the face I imagine you make any time there are more than two people in a room and
yes.
you walk in.
Dude, it's the most relatable
just
thing. Mary's
confused,
face in this film.
Scared, disgust.
Yeah, Mary's face in The Holdovers is the most relatable character by a long shot. She walks into that party with...
Not Mary, just her face.
Just her face.
Okay, yeah,
the
yeah.
The facial
fine,
expressions.
Fine, fine, I'm with it, I'm with yeah, it, yeah.
The, yeah. She walks into that party with nothing but... disdain on her face as if to be sort of like, oh God, this was a mistake. That's me in every social situation where I'm like, yeah, I'm down for this, man. As soon as I get there, walk in, oh, this was a mistake.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The other blink and you'll miss it moment of comedy genius in The Holdovers.
Okay.
The other blink and you'll miss it moment of comedy genius is when they're celebrating New Year's and Hunnam shakes Danny's hand.
Yeah.
Hugs Mary mm-hmm. and then just completely blanks Angus. And Angus has got his hand out,
yeah.
just gets completely left hanging and just ends up putting it in his pocket.
But you can see him smile like in the scene as well. I picked up yeah. on that straight away. I was like, that must have been too funny to just yeah. stand there and go, what do I do?
Right.
Okay. I think a few, I didn't really pick up on the blink and you'll miss it moments. I have a few favorite comedy moments. Paul Hunnam walking the grounds as if to be yeah. sort of like, I'm going to exercise. This is me trying to be a good person. And it's the weird arms in circles,
yeah.
doing the stretches like he's preparing for something. Finds an American football on the ground, tries to throw it. And fuck me, man. It's like the wettest flannel in the, yeah. the softest breeze trying to yeah. throw a football. Fuck me, man. I was crying. I could not stop howling at that.
The amount that I related. Anytime I see yeah. someone being bad at sports, I'm just like, well, that's me.
Yeah.
It's nice yeah, to feel yeah, seen.
Yeah. yeah. There's a wicked bit as well where... Mr. Hunnam's looking for Angus.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And he's
yeah.
sort of going all over the school and he's trying to find him. He's like, he immediately thinks...
He's legged it, yeah.
I've trusted him a little bit and he's taken advantage of me. He's running away. He's doing this. He's lulled me into a false sense of security and fucked me over. And he gets to the front of the school and it does like a zoom... Like a
oh,
zoom.
The 70s smash zoom.
The smash yeah, yeah. zoom where he's like, Angus!
Smash zoom. yeah, 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 yeah. There's loads of little 70s editing moments like that. Like there's loads of dissolves in this film.
Yeah.
Which you never see anymore. It slowly fades from one shot
yeah,
to the
yeah,
other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is great because it kind of draws parallels between the two scenes.
Yeah.
You never see it anymore. You never see smash zooms anymore.
Also, it's my favorite type of transition that exists.
Really?
It's the easiest to use in Premiere, but yeah.
I have a question for you, Ben.
Hit me with it.
Does The Holdovers, for you as a movie, does it feel different when you watch it and you know that it's been out at the cinemas and been well received at a cinema?
Wow.
Would it feel like a different movie if you watched it and you knew it was just straight to streaming?
That's a really fucking good question, you know? Okay. It does with this film.
Right.
Because this film has so many moments that make me feel like it's a film from my childhood. It makes me feel like yes. a kid again. It has yeah, that yeah. slight innocence. It's like a Home Alone mm-hmm. movie made for adults, right? It's,
yes,
it's
yes, yes,
cheeky
yes, yes.
and charming and witty and warm, but it's also, you are penile cancer. That's a literal quote from this film, right? Yeah, it's everything that I need it to be.
Yeah.
So for this to be in the cinema and be well received by fucking large amounts of people makes me feel like I'm not alone. It makes me feel like there is many, many, many totally. More of my people out there. And that gives me even more warm and more cozy. Mm-hmm. So fuck you, Alexander Payne, because now I'm even warmer and even cozier. And I hope it makes you more nauseous.
I think for me, it's the same. So I think different reason, but okay. I think if this was a straight to streaming film,
mm-hmm.
It would be a small story written for a small screen.
Yeah.
And it would be the industry saying, we know that small events like this about small people aren't important and aren't worth pushing and promoting. We don't believe in this kind of filmmaking anymore, right?
Yeah.
So just straight to Netflix. It's like The Lion King 5. You know, no one gives a shit. Yeah. It's not a main Disney. It's just straight to VHS.
Yeah.
Why would I give a shit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
With a big theatrical release that they paid 30 million to just be the distributors of this film.
That's fucking incredible. It's an indie movie
they paid 30 million
for,
that's right?
incredible.
So they push it out to big theaters and it makes a profit and it makes me go, these small moments about small people have been given scale by the size of the venue that has been decided that it's going to play in.
I love this.
It's worth zooming in on.
Yeah.
If it was straight to streaming, I don't think I would care as much. I would as a film, but I'd go, what a sweet little indie movie. What a sweet little straight
same.
To DVD.
Yeah, I'd be like, that was a really nice movie. But again, it was aimed at home audiences. It was, if you're scrolling Netflix and got fuck all else to watch, and you're sort of like, oh, fuck it, we'll chance it.
Exactly. It's the difference of seeing like a weird, unique person on the internet where you're like, oh, they're fucking weird, or seeing them on TV. You're like, oh, society values this.
I love that.
And I feel like...
I love that.
Right? Now, you got a choice here because I'm aware that we're a little tight on time. I can give you, I've overprepared for this episode. We could talk about this for like 4 hours.
Yeah,
I've
seriously.
Got so much more that's not even in the show notes. It's like in a separate document.
I love that you have two documents open right now that honestly, you're exactly that person.
I've gone full Charlie Day red string eyeliner on this one. Right? So, do you want an on-set fact about the actors or do you want emotional insight about the fictional characters?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay, well, fuck it. We'll just do a long episode.
Thank you.
So Dominic Sessa, who plays Angus Tully in The Holdovers, never acted in a film before.
In the bin. That makes me feel like shit because he is immediately incredible. Like
now, before you feel too bad, he's done theatre before, so he's...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You
know, oh, okay. But then he had a dry run. That's like someone picking up a Nintendo and being just amazing at Monster Hunter, but also then you find out they've got a decade of arcade behind them. You know what I mean? It's like, well, of course you're going to be good at it.
But he's still in college, which is...
Oh, fuck you. Just fuck you, man. Oh, I've done a bit of theatre. I've acted with Paul Giamatti and I was mint at everything. Also, I'm a child. Fuck you.
Fuck. So I watched an interview with Paul Giamatti. He's being interviewed by Ethan Hawke, of all people, for the Academy.
What? Okay.
It was odd. It was odd because Ethan Hawke was asking questions that were twice the length of the answer he was getting.
Right.
Because he was kind of using his question to explain what his answer to the question would be and then going, what about you?
Oh, that's gross.
It's a weird interview. Yeah,
okay.
But he kind of said, you know, how was it working with Dominic? And Paul was really kind of quite sweet. He said that it actually informed his performance because he'd been working as a character actor for so long. He's used to, like I said earlier, getting five lines
and having to
put his whole performance in there. And he's been doing it for so long that he calls himself like a working professional actor.
Yeah.
He's got shortcuts and shorthand and a method, and he just goes, but scene done, great.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of able to relax into being good. And then Dominic would come up and go, don't really get this scene. Like, what's going on? Like, can you give me a hand? And by walking the new guy through it, you know, this is how this part of the process works. This is what they're going to need from us. It made him question and rethink and sort of reapply himself and move slower.
So he had to do the exact same thing that Dominic was going through and break it down into more detail because he's at a speed and a pace where he can just do it
Man's business. He can kind of intuit what the scene says.
Right.
But then sometimes in showing Dominic through the scene, he'd go, oh, I'd missed that.
Right.
Oh, I might do that instead.
That's fucking awesome, man. That's what I imagine doing this podcast is like for you. You're like, but instead of acting, it's like just talking to a person.
Now, Ben, you're going to give the nice lady your £6 and she's going to let you have the fruit shoot.
No denial on that, by the way. Thank you for that, mate. Nah, Ben, you're all right. Don't worry about it. You're good. Cheers, man. Thank you.
You're way more socially confident than I am and you know it.
No, I'm just fucking blissfully ignorant on everything. Social cues mean nothing to me. So I'm just sort of like, yay, I'm here.
Now, the emotive point, which I think... it's my favorite in the film.
Okay.
So everyone changes. Everyone goes through a period of change. You got Angus Tully, who's the young kid,
yep.
who goes from being a misbehaving little shit who doesn't appreciate his privilege.
Okay.
It ends the film very much like he's going to commit to study.
Right.
Mary goes from a place of broken to a place of healing. But Hunnam, throughout the entire film, he's got this whole thing about, you're a Barton man, I'm a Barton man, mm-hmm. and Barton men don't lie.
Okay.
And the problem is that he's trapped in Barton. Barton, the school that they work at,
yeah.
has become his cage. He's built his little cage of what a Barton man is and should be, and he tries to live up to that ideal
right.
set by the founding professor.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, at the end of the film, what does Mr. Hunnam do for Angus?
Oh my God.
He lies.
Yeah.
He stops being a Barton man at that moment. Him lying to Barton for a student God. Makes him go, fuck being a Barton man. Some things are more important.
That's genuinely lovely. And I've got
isn't it?
I've got a catch in my throat from it, and I'm trying not to. I'm very sensitive today.
Yeah.
This film made me laugh and cry a lot, sometimes at the same time, and it was infuriating. That's really lovely. That's really lovely.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Shall we?
Let's.
Okay. Fuck me, man. This whole film is just, you know, those weird videos you see on YouTube of people playing the newlywed game. No, I'm joking. It's of like people doing dumb shit with dominoes, where it starts off at a normal domino piece and then it'll go to like, and now it's going to crush a building. And it,
Rube Goldberg machines and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and it works. And
the ping pong ball goes into the,
and it totally works. This film is just, it's a much more delicate version of that. It's just.
It is, yeah.
Well, fuck it. You know, have some gravy on your chicken dinner. And then that turns into a full-blown, I've bought you a fucking blank book so you can write your monograph. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, this is too long for a monograph. And it's like, I know. Don't.
Oh my God, another desperately cute fact.
Oh my God.
So you know when she gifts him his monograph, it's got a bow on it.
Oh, stop. Yes.
It's the same bow that she got on the gift from Danny because she's not had time to go out and buy present wrapping stuff. So she's taken the bow off the present she received from Danny and she's put it on the present she's giving. The only reason she can give a gift is because she got a gift.
Fuck me, man. Well,
she's reused her Christmas wrapping.
Fuck's sake.
I'm just bullying you at this point.
It's yeah. So that's a thing. And isn't that lovely? Oh my God. Who gets nauseated that this is a warm and lovely film?
The director.
What a cunt. He makes it and then does this sort of like, oh, I'm lordier than lordy. Fuck you.
Yeah. I'm better than human emotion.
Fuck me, man. That's too much. Yeah, so there's that. The fucking dominoes just get knocked over little bit by little bit, but it's almost like the dominoes are identical in size and it's just these gentle, soft acts of kindness that they're not used to. Yes, it's just it's pillow dominoes. I'm a mess right now, man. I'm struggling to like stabilize.
That our movie review podcast is just a man crying going, it's pillow dominoes. This film is pillow dominoes.
Fuck you, man. Oh. Do you know what I hate about this as well? This is on the internet forever. Like, I'm going to be 60 one day and they're going to go, didn't I hear you crying over the holdovers because of a bow? And I'll be like, fuck you. Fuck you. I know your mum. Get off my garden.
Fuck off, mate. Your nan's got a skin fade.
Fuck off. Your nan's got a skin fade. Oh my God.
It's my favourite insult.
It's the best. Me and you shouting that at each other at a fucking London Underground urinal with people between us will forever be my favourite memory. I fuck it. Honestly, mate, it's too much. This whole thing, each tiny little decision saved all of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't realise what they were doing at the time. And at the end of it, it all comes together. It's too much. It's too much again. So let's move on.
Yeah.
So speaking of soft...
Yeah.
This next point that I'm about to make is going to lead directly into my rating. I know it's not how we normally do things.
Okay. Yeah.
But I'm going to give this point and then I'm going to do my rating because I'm on an emotional knife edge right now. Right, okay, I don't know how long I can balance. So I'm just going to get it done. And then I'm going to listen to your rating and your explanation. And that's going to make me cry more. Ready?
Yeah, I've written mine to try and bully you. So it's all good.
Mint. Looking forward to this one. This whole film is just humans being humans, helping humans whilst learning how to forgive themselves and heal from their own issues, or at least start to try and like confront them in a healthy way. You know what I mean? It's totally.
It really is.
It's lovely. It's warm. It's cozy. Fuck you, Alexander Payne. Your work gives me a fuzzy glow on the inside, and there's not a thing you can do about it. Fat 10, fattest 10. It makes me want to be a better person, and it makes me feel like everyone around me who's a bit broken, a bit sad, if I do one tiny nice little thing, it might help them in the long run. And that is devastating to think that I might have missed those opportunities.
Oh, mate,
so now I'm falling off the edge. Your turn, please.
Right, okay. So look, my whole thing with this movie is we did The Zone of Interest last week, and it was genuinely one of the hardest things we've had to do on this podcast because we had to balance the show that we like to do, which is irreverent and honest and relatively shameless. Do you know what I mean? We don't really go in for shame on the show.
Yeah.
And so there was a whole bunch of stuff that we had to balance, and we had to watch that fucking film, and then we had to talk about that film for an hour and police our own feelings about it and all this sort of stuff. So this week being the holdovers really kind of was deliberate, because life, as Hunnam says, is a hen house ladder, right? It's short and covered in shit.
Yeah.
And sometimes that ladder kind of leads to major disappointments in life. You've had them, I've had them, everyone listening has had them. And some weeks, like last week's movie, it's even more bitter and cruel place than kind of bears imagining, right?
Yeah.
But this film says you have to reach out to help those around you with just any spare scrap of kindness that you can muster. Even if it's like just a smile or some Christmas cookies or getting a shit tree and putting it on a table. Because when you're about to throw in the towel and you've got absolutely no fucks left to give, like sometimes you might just open your door and find a copy of fucking Meditations wrapped in shit brown parcel paper.
Yeah.
It's about being together, because everyone's pain is unique. Your pain is unique from my pain, is unique from the listener's pain, but like none of us are alone in feeling pain. And anyone who can hear us talking right now, that means you're part of the group hug that Ben and I have when things are rough for us. And you listening to the show is the kindness that you do us that gets us through our week. And like the time that you give me to put into this show and the time I give you is little scraps of kindness. And honestly, man, I know that this film is true because we live it.
Yep.
Do you want to play a game?
Yeah. Oh. Fuck you.
I mean it, man. I genuinely do.
Man, it's honestly, that's so fucking lovely to hear. And it's so nice to sort of just be fucking, I don't know.
Mates.
It's just nice to be nice. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, you know,
thank you
the
for
newlyweds
that.
Game. Mate, pleasure.
You know, in this movie,
they've got the newlyweds game.
They do. And I do know it.
Do you want to play it?
Yes, please. Because
we've known each other for like 18 years. So we know each other way better. We could smash this game.
Yeah, but we're also broken brain weirdos. So our answers are going to have changed on a weekly basis for the last 18 years.
Right? Yeah. Totally. Right. Totally. No, fuck you. Like, we're playing it on YouTube because, again, I've still seen the numbers, and that is a deliberate bait and switch, listener, because I love you, but apparently you don't love us enough to watch a fucking game. So off to YouTube, you pop. Buckety bye.
Do you know what I love about everything that you've just said? That was a bit... It wasn't too far. It was in contrast to your previous statement that brought a tear to my eye, and then immediately to fuck you, get over to YouTube, no one's doing shit.
Balanced reporting. I'm like fucking Associated Press up in this bitch.
I'm going to say it's the most bipolar outro to a fucking episode we've ever had, mate.
That's fair.
I am like, I'm circling the drain right now, man. This is like, this has got me. I fucking love you.
It's a pair of fat tens.
Massive, massive fat ten. It's upsetting that the Oscars this year are so soft and so fucking delicate and so gentle, but it's also more upsetting that all of them are so fucking upsetting. So doing all of them back to back is just emotionally draining continuously forever. Yeah.
Well, speaking of upsetting, right. I've got some fucking excellent comment corner.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, I'm back in. All right.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a whole salad for you.
Are we doing the normal ones? Are we just, because I need to grab some off socials.
No, I've got a better idea. No. You don't need to grab anything.
Okay.
I've got the YouTube channels.
Right. Yeah.
Filtered comments.
Yes,
the ones
buddy.
That are held for review.
Yes, man. Let's do
and I'm
this.
I'm going to read one out and you're going to tell me whether or not to approve or deny.
Oh, 1000%. Let's do this one.
Okay, so we'll start easy.
Yeah, right?
We'll start easy.
Yeah.
Can one of you retards please watch a proper film? I'm going to say not approved because of the hard R.
Oh, I'm going to say approved that. I want that guy. That guy has a valid point. He wants us to watch a real film. And
okay.
I think he gets us.
Okay, approved. Okay, you ready?
Sure.
Bruh, are you so fucking uneducated that you don't know the term foreshadowing? Stop making videos. You are a waste of time.
Approve. Immediately yeah, approve. That's fucking incredible.
Okay. Oh. You'll like this one because it makes us seem quite a lot younger.
Okay.
Millennials are fucking stupid, aren't they? It's called foreshadowing. So nice to be a millennial.
We are millennials, though. Millennials, like early 80s, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But we're just
early 80s?
Yeah, we're elder millennials. I think it's like 84 or 85 is millennial, right?
Good. I fucking know.
I don't know.
We're elder millennials. Confused, so I denied it. Hide user.
All right.
Right, you ready?
Yeah.
Marvel shit is only for mentally challenged idiots.
Holy shit, man. Holy shit.
I'm tempted to approve that one.
I think we should. I mean, that's an approve immediately, but fuck me, yeah. Man. That's. I think the anger's aimed in the wrong direction.
Sorry. I fucked it up, mate.
Okay.
It's. I'll reread it.
Thank you.
Mavel shit is only for mentally challenged idiots.
That is 1000% from a 55-year-old man who doesn't understand how the internet works, married to a woman called Mavel, and it was literally like, Mavel, stop telling me about wasps. Mm-hmm. I don't care about your research. You work in boots.
Right. This is the last one.
Okay.
It's too much anger for me to cosplay
as. This is fucking incredible.
But this one's a lot calmer. There's not the rage there, right? This is kind of more of a...
Okay.
More of a sort of ask for more information.
Yeah.
Do you have Down syndrome?
Ooh. That, I mean...
Now, the question is, there's two of us in the video.
Yeah.
I don't know which one of us that's related, aimed at, because it seems unlikely that we both would.
I like that this one isn't insulting. It's just a genuinely inquisitive question.
It's a request. Yeah, right,
yeah,
exactly.
It's nice. Okay.
Look, I'll ask him after our well-being, seeing if we have any extra needs.
Yeah. That's quite caring.
I mean, I would think after 18 years, I'd know, but do you have Down syndrome?
I don't, but it's nice that people are checking in.
Come on, get down.
Oh my God. Oh my days. That's an immediate edit. That's an immediate edit.
I might keep it in.
Oh, fuck's sake.
That was Comment Corner. If you want to be part of next week's Comment Corner, you can find us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, which I don't check, but Ben does.
I did have a very good conversation with someone that was trying to sell us butt downloads today.
Just comment on any of our stuff, and if it amuses us, or if it's interesting, or it's an interesting little bit of food for thought, you'll make the show.
Or join the Discord and abuse us directly to our pockets.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pineapple, just quickly look at the...
Got you. Yeah. Hit it.
That's all the time we've got for this. Oh, no, wait. We are currently running a competition over on YouTube. Click the link in the episode description on whatever platform you're listening to this on right now. In the episode description, which talks about what you're going to listen to.
Sure.
There's a link.
Sure.
Or you can head over to our YouTube channel.
Now, this is a bit of a waste of time, man. Everyone is clearly already subscribed. They fucking must be. We've been doing this shit. Yeah. We've been doing extra shit on YouTube for weeks now. for weeks now.
Yeah.
They must know about the games that will happen over there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you're right, Ben. I'm sure you're right. I'm sure it's not that there's a massive disparity between the people that listen and the people that watch the stuff that we make specially and is edited by the lovely Anthony, who is the funniest member of the podcast.
Unironically, the funniest person that exists within this podcast universe is not part of the
podcast. But head over there. Head over there and enter our competition to the prize is you get to use our mouths for whatever sick little desires you have.
Use our mouths! The prize to use our mouths! 30 seconds script. Completely out of context.
So finish quick.
On Instagram. I always finish first. Remember what Ricky Bobby says. If you're not first, you're last.
Until next week, that's all the time we have for now. Head over to YouTube, watch the rest of the show. I'm now going to cosplay a society and tell you to do what society always tells you to do, while Ben, however, is going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, and emotions of this film into a nice little motivational speech to thank you for spending an hour of time with us, especially at the start of your week. So, consume.
I am emotionally drained, and there is no part of me that will be able to sum up the weekly motivation more than the holdovers. So my Monday motivation is go and watch the holdovers, love yourself, be kind to yourself, be kind to those around you, because genuinely you do not fucking know how much impact a tiny act of kindness can have. You see that? So that was me being kind to myself and to you also, because that was lung exercise for you and it made me feel very good because it was quite funny to me.
I didn't take a big enough breath, or I was going to fucking die.
Don't be a cunt, I guess is the message. Or do, but you know, be a kind cunt.